Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. Presented by EMP 180 Weight Loss, the standard for weight loss in the D.C. area. The Alexander location now open, taking appointments. Coming up later this hour, Jason LaConfora. He'll join us at 9:40. We got Bish's Best Bet at 9:20. But right now, it's our Redskins beat reporter, Craig Hoffman. What's up, Craig?
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
So let's start before the game, because you reported this. It's on the sportsjunkies.com. You reported that Josh Norman, after the Monday Night Football game, actually took some ownership on his role and called a team meeting. And tell us, kind of fill us in on what happened.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because Josh is a guy that is obviously very out front in terms of the media, and that was the crux of D'Angelo Hall's criticism on your show last week. But to his teammates, he is much more reserved. He is someone who is a little bit of a recluse, a little bit isolated, the kind of guy who's just kind of off in the corner by himself in the meeting room, or, you know, as other guys are hanging out. He's there, but he's not really present. He's not really open. And so on Tuesday, he really opened up. First, he called a meeting. Second, he opened up in the meeting, much more about, as Kaim said with you guys earlier, the way Dunbar described it, was a lot more about chemistry and that kind of thing than it was any kind of X's and O's. And so what happened was that kind of that harbored a lot of good feelings. Those good feelings turned into better communication on the field, their best week of practice that they've had all year, and then a performance that really, in a lot of ways, I think we are going to look back on if this season turns around and goes well, as a critical turning point in the season, because the drama around Norman had a real potential to have, you know, kind of leave these shockwaves throughout the franchise, where there were some career-defining decisions that were going to have to be made about him. But if he plays well and he is harmonious in the locker room and is not causing problems or causing stress and drama, then all those things go away. And so to see him play well, to see his teammates genuinely celebrate with him and really embrace him, that really was, I think, much more important than a victory in a single game. And it all started with this meeting on Tuesday.
Craig, in your opinion, is Josh Norman more respected or resented by his teammates because of his high salary and, you know, the Dancing with the Stars and, you know, the Hollywood aspect of his lifestyle? In your opinion, which one is it?
I think that before, like, I can speak a lot more at this point to the specifics of the DB room. And I would say he's a lot more respected now than he was last week. Like, that's how significant Tuesday might have been, where he completely changed the way I think everybody else in that room thought of him. I mean, you got to remember, DJ Swearinger and Josh Norman have known each other since they were in high school together in Greenwood, South Carolina.
Did they play at the same high school?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they played 2 years together. And it just didn't even, like, that stuff didn't even matter. They weren't super fond of each other. And, you know, DJ is this guy that puts in a ton of work and does all this film study. And the work that Josh puts in is different. It's not that he doesn't work hard, but it's a lot more the after practice, doing his own workout kind of thing. And their demeanors in the meeting rooms and how they approach studying is very different. And so when Josh had made these mental mistakes, it was treated very different than the way that a guy like DJ did. DJ, it's like, oh, he's, you know, he saw something on film. He's going to try to make a play and he guessed wrong, but it's okay because we know how much studying he does. And with Josh, it's like, hey, will you pay attention? And so to see him completely kind of flip everything around and really embrace his teammates and tell them, like, I trust you, I need you, and I know you guys need me, and I'm going to be better, and then to go out and back it up. For the moment, it seems to have really flipped that. And I thought what was really interesting, too, is I asked, like, okay, so that's nice, or do you ride this wave for a week, and then if you play poorly, does it change? And the person I was talking to about this goes, No, I don't think so, because we feel like we can call him out now and that he can call us out. So it was kind of a two-way street where if he got on someone else, they kind of rolled their eyes and be like, okay, yeah, sure. Just because you get paid a lot of money doesn't mean anything because you ain't playing that well and you're doing the stuff that's killing us on defense. And now they would respond differently, and they feel like if he starts slipping or doing something different, that they can talk to him and he will be open to listening.
You watch the film each week, and I know you haven't watched this game's film, but why aren't Ryan Kerrigan and Preston Smith getting to the quarterback? Is there something different this year? Are they dropping back in coverage more? What's going on?
Well, there's been a combination of a couple of things, as is typical. Some of it, some of these games, it really was the ball just was out quickly, and it's really hard to fault them. But at this point, like, you've seen enough different types of offense, you've seen enough games that you should have fallen into a couple of sacks by now. I think for Kerrigan, you know, Preston doesn't always win, and you know he's a good pass rusher, but there are times where he just gets blocked one on one, and that happens. He's got to figure out ways to win and counter and get pressure. For Kerrigan, a lot of times he's winning up the field, and then just quarterbacks step up because he doesn't really get the proper depth, and he doesn't ever counter. And I don't think tackles fear a counter move from him where he needs to go up and then go back underneath, and he'll step right into the quarterback sometimes. And instead, he's just trying that rip move around the edge. And, you know, especially if he's never going to get a holding call in his entire life, which seems to be how he operates, even though he's held on a wide number of plays, a huge percentage of plays, he never gets the call. And so if you're just going to sit there and have your head be propped back and try to rip underneath a tackle's armpit, like, how about you punch down and swim back underneath inside? And so for Ryan, it's about getting that counter move and figuring out whether it's a spin, whether it's an up and under, to get home. And then for both these guys, it's getting a little bit faster on some of these stunts and twists that have given the Redskins offensive line so much trouble, but their defense hasn't really executed at a high level yet. They've got to figure out how to do that. Allen and Payne and Ioannidis have done a pretty good job. Even the pressures yesterday that mattered came from people other than those edge rushers. But for those guys, like, it's time. One is paid very handsomely, and the other wants to be paid very handsomely. And the thing you get paid handsomely for as an edge is sacks, and they have not produced so far this year.
All right, so let's shift to the offense. They put up a couple touchdowns early, and as they've done in several games, they can't find the end zone in the second half. What's your theory there? Why aren't they able to convert drives into touchdowns in second halves?
It's a great question, and I think they're still very much trying to figure it out. I mean, Alex was great, obviously, in the first 15 yesterday. They figured out some plays that he likes. And then as the afternoon goes, the execution just isn't as sharp. Some of it was protection yesterday. Smith missed a ton of throws again. He seemed to, they really obviously made an emphasis this week, like, let's get Reed involved. He had 9 targets, only 5 catches, but then he's got, you know, the 2 touchdowns, or he plays a huge role in as Smith stares him down, then goes somewhere else. But there's a couple of plays in the second half where he really locks in on Jordan for too long. And some of those are on Alex, where he needs to move to somewhere else in his progression quicker. But some of those are on Jordan, too. And Jordan's got to understand that he can't always set up every single route, triple stick, and then go. Sometimes he's got to win with speed. Sometimes he's got to win with tempo. Sometimes you have to just go and trust that, you know, the way the coverage is going to let you to win without having to do 17 crossover steps or even 1 crossover step. And so I think that at times in the second half, he got kind of locked in, and for the reasons I just mentioned, the ball doesn't wind up as a completion, and that kills your drive. You know, a couple holding penalties here and there obviously hurt as well. So it's tough. I don't think that there's been a consistent answer, which in a way makes it more difficult, but they need to figure it out because the fact that they have a winning record and have not had a good offensive second half yet is pretty astonishing.
Is this going to be who they are offensively, though? Just kind of relying on Peterson to get, you know, close to 100 yards, and, you know, maybe Smith gets to 250 passing, and they're going to average in the low 20s, and they just try and work the clock and
yeah,
ball
I
possession,
so.
That type of stuff? I mean,
yeah,
is that who they are?
The way I've been describing this yesterday was it was the Alex Smithiest of wins.
Yeah.
I mean, it is exactly the formula that you go, I don't know how they won this game, but he does it all the time. And the reality is, once you kind of take a deeper dive, is you don't turn the football over. So that limits the number of possessions for your opponent. It also extends your possessions to try to milk the clock and shortens the game. He converts enough third downs where, you know, a lot of those incompletions, first, second down, you know, you get a couple yards rushing, you're in a third and manageable, he completes one pass, well, all of a sudden you got a new set of downs, you can milk another 2 minutes off the clock, and the game gets shorter and shorter. You just repeat that formula, and, you know, you get a couple of field goals, you convert a couple of touchdowns, and your defense creates a couple of turnovers, and you're in a really, really good position to win the game. And that's exactly what happened. It's tough when you don't have a running game that you can count on every single week, because if Peterson's banged up, like, man, how much longer can he do this at his age with all of these different injuries? But that's the formula that is going to give you the best chance to win with this guy at quarterback, because if he has to push the ball down the field, he's clearly not comfortable doing it. Even yesterday, they found a new kind of branch on their offensive tree by using some of their outside guys on underneath routes. I mean, Doxson had a slant that was called back on a penalty from Trent, and then the very next play, they go right back to him on a stop route that I've been waiting to see all season. Like, teams play so far off of him and are terrified that the only thing he can do is run a go route. So just tell him to turn around, stop, and get 8 yards for free. And if they can do that, and Smith is comfortable throwing that, which he did a couple times to New Orleans, or against New Orleans to Harris, if he can do that to Paul, if he can do that to Josh, he can do that to Maurice and all these different guys, and start getting some of them involved, then maybe it becomes a more sustainable formula. But short to intermediate passes, running game, RPOs, that's the formula to win with Smith, and all of that stuff is a lot easier to call and a lot more conducive to success when you're ahead in the game.
Joined by Craig Hoffman, our Redskins beat reporter. All right, this is not definable, but I want your take on this, because you're in the locker room after the games. You're around these players. They win in week one. Everybody's optimistic. They lay an egg in week two. They surprise us and beat the Packers. Then they lay an egg against the New Orleans Saints. They win again yesterday. Maybe surprise some of us. Beat Carolina, a good team. Was the locker room different after this win, or does it feel the same? Because they need to break this streak and actually string something together.
Yeah, after the game, I would say there were still people that were mad about New Orleans, which I think is a good thing. Like DJ Swearinger was still like upset about New Orleans and saying, you know, we have to be consistent. We have to be consistent. Like, this isn't good enough. Yeah, today was good. We beat a good team, but like we gotta do more. Gruden is always pretty the same at the podium. Alex Smith is the same whenever.
Sure.
So it's some guys it's harder to tell than others. I think that there was a lot of the joyous moments that I was around were more to do with what Josh did. You know, guys legitimately happy for him to see him kind of come out of that. But there was a serious tone. Now we'll see if that carries over to today, and they can then, you know, come back on Wednesday and have another good week of practice, and they can keep up that urgency and the communication and all the things they fixed between Monday and Sunday. It's a giant TBD, but at least in the immediate aftermath, I don't think they were overly impressed with themselves. And if they were, I would assume they saw the Cowboys score against what we thought was one of the better defenses in football, where they put up 40 points and run for 10 million yards, and they go, okay, well, we better get back to work. If that doesn't wake you up and say, we need to take this seriously, then I don't know what would. And I think actually the Cowboys beating the Jaguars like they did was probably one of the better things that could have happened for the Redskins, as opposed to a Dallas team that felt like it might have been limping in here based off some previous performances.
And if you had to guess, we talked to you about this during the Junkies pregame show. Chris Thompson, Jameson Crowder ultimately didn't dress. We're kind of on that borderline. If you had to guess, do you think they'll be available come Sunday?
Yeah, I now looking back, feeling like I didn't have as good of a read on it as I thought during the week. I mean, Chris was telling me Friday that he was going to try to play, and apparently that was never really in the card. So clearly it was out of his hands. Because that's a dude that'll play through anything that they'll let him. So I'm curious to see. I mean, he was technically limited, but they could have just dressed him as almost a decoy to make Carolina prepare for him. And then once we left, like, hey, Chris, go inside. You don't have to practice anymore. Or just stand here and watch. So I'm curious to see how active he is in drills and things like that when we get out there on Wednesday. We'll be in the locker room today, maybe get a chance to talk to him. Crowder, I know he was pushing to at least go through warm-ups. I kind of wonder if the weather had a little bit of an impact on that. So I feel a little bit better about Jameson. Like, he's going to at least try to practice this week. But we shall see. I mean, that's obviously a much tougher task. But the good news is yesterday you had guys step up. And, you know, Capri didn't have, like, this insane game, but had a couple of nice plays and meaningful plays in there. You know, Maurice Harris did a nice job in the slot. So I think at the very least, Alex is comfortable with the replacements, but of course they're the replacements for a reason. The other players, Thompson and Crowder, are better.
I said this real quick, Craig, before we let you go. I said this early in the show. If they can beat the Cowboys and the Giants and go 5-2, I think they're in the playoffs.
I think that's probably – I mean, I'd have to look at the rest of the wild card standings, but, like, that have to put them in great place in the division.
Now, that being said, they never win three games in a row.
Right. So, it's tough.
Right.
It's tough for them to do that.
I feel like this is the thing we do where we get out ahead and, like, what if? And then it's like, oh, why did we even think about doing that? It's kind of what we were doing before New Orleans. But, yeah, no, I that thought crossed my mind this morning, too, where if they're at 5-2, like, they'd have to have – like, if let's put it this way. If they're 5-2 – I almost don't see a path where they miss the play or like they finish with some mediocre record and then Jay's still around. Like that would involve some kind of epic collapse. And if they can get things going and then it, obviously health would play a role in that as well.
Yeah.
I feel like they could try to build some confidence, figure some things out. And I would think this team gets better as the year goes, especially offensively as Jay and Alex continue to figure each other out. So if they can build themselves a record cushion while they're still figuring it out, that's a hell of an advantage.
Craig Hoffman, a Redskins beat reporter. Check out his work at sportsjunkies.com, thefandc.com. Thanks, pal.
Yep, you got it. See you guys later.
Thanks,
in the
Craig.
Week.
Now, that being said, you know, if they go 5-2, the three games after that are Falcons, Bucks, Texans. All right. I could see them losing any, or if not all of those games.
But you could see them beating those teams. The Texans are true.
I would like to see the stat 5-2.
Falcons
like,
have a losing
what
record.
What percentage of 5-2 teams go to the playoffs? It's got to be pretty high.
Well, yeah, because if you just go 5-4, slightly above 500 the rest of the way. You're a 10-win team, and that usually gets you in the playoffs.
Correct. So these next
praying
two.
For that Vikings-Redskins playoff game. Oh!
That would be great.
I can see it off in the distance.
So the next two are big.
I mean, I have something to look forward to over the next 3 months.
Who would you root for, Cakes?
Who would I root for?
Oh, he'd root for Cousins. He would root for Cousins. You know you would.
I might have to root for old Kirky.
Even though that hurts us.
Yeah, it does hurt us, but you know what? I'd ultimately root for my wallet. I think I'd root for this game.
He'd root for a monster Kirk game.
You're probably right.
But a squeaker loss.
That's probably the scenario I would envision.
Ratings bonus.
31-30 skins. You would love that.
Exactly.
Cousins throws for four touchdowns.
Right. We got Jason Lockenfor from CBS Sports coming up at 9:40 to go around the NFL. But next, we get Bish's best bet right here on the Junkies.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to the show, Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. Don't forget Jason Lockenfor joins us at 9:40. We'll go around the NFL with him. After we're done, it's Grant and Danny. I believe Danny flying solo from Redskins Park today on a Victory Monday.
My hood.
That's right, and he'll be joined by DJ Swearinger as they are joined every single Monday during the NFL season.
You won't stop by and do a segment with them?
Yeah, probably not. Walking Dead's more important to me. So I'm looking forward to episode 2 of the new season. By the way, was Grant in Boston?
He is doing the show. That's an update.
I thought
it was just Danny, but it is Grant and Danny. Grant from Boston. That's correct.
All right, correct. He was covering the game 2 of the ALCS last night.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
All right, time now for Bish's Best Bet, brought to you by the one and only sports book at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Jason, I believe, is 2 games under .500, but after a very rough start.
16-18-2.
Not too bad.
Split over the weekend, gave you Central Florida, -4.5. I thought that was a good play, but they were down 30-17 with the quickness. I believe Memphis scored in their first 6 possessions. So Central Florida had to come back and win that game by 1. It's a loser. Gave you the Dolphins. That was my NFL play of the weekend, +3.5. They went outright. Dodgers series bet pending with the Brewers.
Monitoring Big Effin' Winners on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Your partner Skippy from Big Fat Winners, the podcast. I believe he runs that Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's quitting college football now.
He's giving
so up.
Up
and down. Did he take it on the chin in college football?
I can't remember what his play. I'll talk to him today, but he's been struggling a little bit in his plays in college. He's been much better in the NFL. I believe he's 18-8 in the NFL.
Yeah, he's very brash about his NFL picks, but quite the opposite when it comes to college.
It's hard to predict the future, Cakes.
It's very difficult. It's tough to do.
All right, so I'm just looking at this game tonight in Green Bay. Weather should be fine. It's going to be cold. It'll be about 37 degrees at kickoff, but there's going to be no precip. Niners are 8.5-point dogs, maybe 9, depending on where you're shopping here. The Niners have given up 27, 29, 38, and 29 points in their last four.
Ooh.
They are -8 in the plus-minus. That's next to last in the league. Last week, they had 5 turnovers in the game against Arizona. Dominated them statistically, but had 5 turnovers and
so
lost
Beathard
by 10.
So Beathard is a turnover machine, is what you're trying to tell everybody.
He ain't great. And Beathard, in his two games that he's played this year, filling in for Jimmy Grapes, he's thrown for 349 and 298.
He puts up numbers.
He's thrown 91 times in two games. All right, so that's what they're – Matt Breida's a little banged up. Not sure if he'll be 100% or even if he'll play tonight. They might have to rely on Alf. So I think they're going to throw a lot tonight. And, you know, even though Aaron Rodgers is not having a great year statistically in terms of touchdowns, he is averaging 314 per game in terms of yards, which ranks about 7th in the league. All right, so they're throwing it a lot.
Yeah.
And you know San Francisco's going to
That's how the
to
game has changed. That 314 per game is 7th in the league.
Right. And you know that San Francisco's probably going to be trailing for most of this game.
Yes.
And I assume they're going to be throwing a lot. Green Bay's gone over the total in 22 of their last 28. I gave you the numbers for San Francisco. They give up a lot of points. I'm going to go over the 46.
Mm.
I think that's a good play.
You like the over. Here is what your partner Skippy wrote on Big F and Winners, at Big F and Winners. Is anyone there? CFB equals impossible.
Yeah, college football's hard.
Yes, I'm having a hard time figuring it out.
And then he's very reactive. He goes, I guess he's responding to somebody, but he goes, you're correct. Can't speak for Jason and Pat, but I will go down to one pick a week. I blow in college football.
I mean, if I would have given you Georgia plus 19 in this weekend, how much cash would you put on that?
Probably a good amount.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't predict this stuff. I mean, this past weekend, I don't know, what was it, 2, 6, 7, 8, 15, 18, and 21, I believe, all lost?
Yep, a lot of upsets in college football.
I mean, West Virginia, never in that game at Iowa State. It was just hard.
So last night you didn't watch the game, but New England wins against the Chiefs, who were undefeated.
Penn State was awful. God, what an awful loss that was.
Does KC losing to New England make you feel like New England's going to be back in the AFC Championship? What are the threats are there in the AFC?
I mean, before the season.
I mean, the AFC South is poopy with Jacksonville, Houston, Tennessee. They're all 3-3. Bortles isn't going to be.
Is Bell going to play for Pittsburgh?
I think he may come back.
Reports are that he's going to be back during the bye week.
I don't think he's going to come back this week. I think he may string it out to the last possible week.
All right, so if he comes
back,
if they don't trade him and he's back, that's a whole different animal now with Pittsburgh. Even though their defense is a little dicey, but now it's just another big weapon. It's going to take him a few weeks to get in the mix.
So you put the Steelers in the pool of teams that could knock off the Patriots.
Yeah, I still think the Ravens.
Chiefs, Steelers, what about
the Ravens? The Ravens are 4-2. They don't allow points.
Well, if that happens, the Steelers better play them at Heinz Field because they are not going to beat them.
I mean,
in
Valdez,
Foxborough.
Do you think the Ravens can go into New England or go into Kansas City and win? With their offense? I just don't know if they can.
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, they've done it before.
Oh, that's true. I don't know. I guess you got to put the Ravens in the mix just because based on the record. I don't put anybody in the AFC South in there. Jacksonville's dead.
What about San Diego?
No, because Rivers never wins big games.
Yeah, but that offense is humming.
Yeah,
Melvin Gordon.
Well, they've had great offenses before.
Although, didn't they lose? They've lost to – their losses are to the Chiefs. And did they lose the Rams?
Yes.
I think those are their only
two
losses.
So when they actually face the Sillies, they lose.
Yes, okay, but exactly.
But in the – I believe in the season opening against the Chiefs, at least two guys on the Chargers dropped touchdowns for Phillip Rivers.
I just
like they should have won that game.
I'm not a believer.
I'm not a huge believer.
They're
either,
doing this
generally.
Bosa, right? Bosa hasn't come
Bosa
back.
Bosa hasn't played yet, and they're still winning games.
They drafted that safety who's legit.
Derwin James.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're outside chance. I just know watching that game, I root against the Patriots. I'm just tired of the Patriots always getting the championship game, always getting the Super Bowl. I mean, Tom Brady's been to 8 Super Bowls. 8!
All right,
and
well,
there's a good chance they're going to go again.
There's a good chance. Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd say that right now in the AFC, there's maybe four teams. Four might be a stretch that can actually represent them in Super Bowl.
The Chiefs made it a game, but as you said, it was 24-6 at the half. They seemed to
they were getting crushed.
Rattle Mahomes a bit.
Cakes might be a believer in the Chargers, but just look at Phillip Rivers in the postseason. I'm just not a believer in them. and their defense always seems to have holes. I mean, they've given up twice as many points as the Ravens.
Pats have such a cushy schedule, too. At Chicago, look, Chicago, I'm sure they'll bounce back, but I wouldn't pick them against the Patriots, even at Soldier Field.
They'll figure out a way to limit Khalil Mack's impact.
At Buffalo, this is a big one. Sunday, November 4th, they host Green Bay in primetime. Then they're at Tennessee the following week.
They're going to win.
They're going to beat them by 30.
They're going to win 12 games. And next year, they're going to do it again, too. And you're going to say this. Why don't we put all our money on New England to win the division?
All I have is right.
You never do
I
it.
Just never actually consummate the bet.
You're right, except for when you say, bet your mortgage on fill in the blank.
Well, I mean, those instances, I'm clearly not right.
Let me say this about the Ravens. Obviously a very good defense. Valdez, you've watched this team. They played the Bills, the Broncos, the Browns, and the Titans in the first six. All right? They've got to play the Saints in Carolina. Then they play the Steelers, Bengals, back-to-back at home.
All right, are they generating that pass rush?
We're going to learn a lot more about them in the next month.
To get the 11 sacks, are they blitzing a lot?
Yeah. And then Smith is doing well.
I'm talking about Jimmy?
No. Zadarius.
Oh, Zadarius. Jim.
And Wink, he sends a lot of people on the blitz. Weddle, pretty good at the blitz. He sends them a lot.
By the way, the Ravens had more sacks than Mariota had completions.
I also thought the game was at one.
Yes.
So that shows you how much I was locked in.
He showed up at the bar and saddled up to the bar at 1
o'clock. Because I thought,
the Ravens game? I see all the games on. It's 1 o'clock.
Because I checked my TV guide, and then there was no
TV guide. Not an
no,
actual.
Like on his phone.
No, like on my phone.
Come on.
I mean, not like an actual physical TV guide.
My mom still has this.
So I checked it, and I looked at CBS, and they're running like some infomercial, and I go, oh, is the game blacked out? Then I hurry up, and I ran the north side to go watch it, because they have the NFL ticket, and I showed up, and I didn't see the Ravens game on any of the TVs. Then I looked down at the guide again, and I saw it was at 4 o'clock, and I said, oh, I'm a big dummy. And I had a beer, and I went back home.
Not as big a dummy as me. I didn't use your silly NFL pass over the weekend, so I was forced to watch the stupid Titans-Ravens game, which is
terrible.
So boring.
Can you get red zone already?
Boring!
I've heard your logic. You've got big bucks. Get the damn red
maybe
zone.
Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll spend a few bucks here and there.
Just like he won't watch Ozark.
Yeah, probably right.
All right, if you're managing your agency's network and looking to modernize, look no further than Hughes. Their managed SD-WAN solution leverages the power of broadband to connect remote offices, reduce service costs, and as a managed solution, it gives you, the agency, one throat to choke. Just imagine not having to juggle all those regional service contracts. Silly, right? Visit government.hughes.com/SDWAN to learn more. That's government.hughes.com/SDWAN. Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. Victory Monday here with the Redskins winning. That means Grant and Danny are out at Redskins Park. Just Danny today.
Maybe I will stop by and say hi. I mean, that's right
Redskins
next to my
Park.
House.
Yep. Do it.
But that would involve a little work.
Yeah, plus you have to watch Walking Dead.
And I'm going to be hungry.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Sorry, plus, you know what? They're not going to let me in Redskins Park.
Why not? You're Bish.
They don't like me.
Part of the media. Best bet every week. All right, joining us right now to talk some NFL is Jason Lockham-Fora. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. From CBS, CBSSports.com. Hell of a game last night, Jason.
Yeah. Lived up to the billing was, I think, is not that luck. These games are, by and large, pretty hard to handicap, at least for me.
Oh, yeah.
This season in particular. But this one, I think, went as expected, right? Two teams that don't exactly scare you with their defense. Two quarterbacks who are pretty fearless. Two of the brightest coaches of their generation, mm-hmm. And guy who holds the ball last probably wins, and that guy in Foxborough more times than not, many more times than not, is Tom Brady. And you know, that's how it played out. There's no shame in Mahomes' game, the couple early turnovers. Look, he's a gunslinger. He's got Brett Favre in him. That's part of his makeup, and that's part of what makes him special. But he also has the ability to overcome that, and you know, that looked like a game that late first half, early second half, you thought maybe New England runs away and hides, but they never did, and the Chiefs came storming back. It was you know, somebody who has zero rooting interest in it, that was a fun football game to just sit back and watch these teams do what makes them great. And you had big plays from Gronk. You had big plays from Hill. I mean, it was, you know, the big-name guys, by and large, stepped up. And that's New England, man. Good luck. Road to the AFC for the Super Bowl probably goes through Foxborough at this point. I don't think the head-to-head tiebreaker with Jacksonville is going to matter all that much. I don't think Jacksonville's winning 12, 13 games like New England probably will. And now they've got a leg up on Kansas City. We already know that Pittsburgh never wins in Foxborough. So it should be interesting.
I saw that you retweeted something that Warren Sharp had tweeted, but he pointed out, imagine if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars looking back on drafting Leonard Fournette when you could have drafted Mahomes.
I mean, it's not even just that. It's like you could have signed Kirk Cousins. You could have signed Teddy Bridgewater or then traded for Teddy Bridgewater after the Jets didn't need him. You could have drafted Deshaun Watson. You could have, you know, I mean, you if the bar is Blake Bortles, you could have drafted Dak Prescott. You know what I mean? Like, that's a low bar, okay? They beat the Patriots, and those in the world inclined to believe that this guy has turned some sort of corner or that, you know, the Jags might finally be a balanced team, and they're the number one team in my power rankings this week. Well, in four games since, he's got a QB rating of 75.51. He leads the NFL with 9 turnovers in their last 3 losses. This is a team, I think, we'd all agree that the Jacksonville Jaguars are not built to play from behind, right? Their own head coach came out before the season and said, knucklehead, just don't turn it over, okay?
Right.
Just don't turn it over and we'll survive. So their last 3 losses, Blake Bortles' first half QB rating is 45.51.
Wow.
So that's how you turn into, oh, we're the number one team, to, oh, we might not even win our own crappy division despite this defense. And it's not Leonard Fournette. He's not a game changer. He's a plotter. He lets you establish something.
Yeah, but they're much better
at,
with him. They're much better with him.
We'll see. The numbers up to this point really didn't bear it out. Now, when he comes back, you know, we'll see. The problem is he was hurt in college, and he's hurt last year, and he's hurt now.
He's always hurt. Always hurt.
When you rule a dude out on Mondays with a hamstring, it means he's probably not playing the next week either. So, you know, whether right now that's just a hypothetical because he's probably not going to be in the lineup again next week, and we'll see about the week after that. But I don't think he's changing all this. I don't think he's going to get in Blake Bortles' head and convince him that dude you were for 4 quarters when Tom Brady was on the other sideline, that's who you really are. Because I think he knows in his heart, that's not who I really am. Mm-hmm. And that's not who he's been. And they've got big problems there. That's a weird division. It's kind of like your guys' division. It's kind of like the NFC East, you know, from week to week. Who knows? But I don't think any of those teams is going to be flirting with a 1 or 2 seed.
So JP just asked us this question. In the AFC in particular, you know, you already mentioned the Pats and the Chiefs. Do you give any other of those teams a shot at winning the AFC? I mean, who knows with Pittsburgh because we don't know about Bell, but I threw them in there just because you have to, especially if Bell's back. Are you a believer in the Ravens? Are you a believer in the Chargers?
I think the problem with the Chargers, they already lost at home to the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are not, even with their defensive problems, the Chiefs are not just going to fall apart. I picked the Chargers to win that division. I buy the Chargers roster. I always have trepidation about how that plays out on Sundays. The best team on paper doesn't always win, and when you're the Chargers, you generally find a way to lose. But I do think they're, you know, and Bosa's going to come back at some point in the second half. I think the Chargers are formidable. Again, I don't know that they can make up that ground on the Chiefs. I think the Chargers will be the wild card team that nobody wants to face. You know, they've got some interesting stuff coming up. I mean, they go to London to play next week. You know, if they can survive that, the schedule eases up for them. I do think, like, if I had to do AFC power rankings right now, you know, I think, look, the Chiefs and the Patriots are probably going to be the 1 and the 2 seed. And then I'd probably have the Chargers as my 3. I think so little separates Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cincinnati, and they beat up on each other so much that I don't know. Again, I don't know that any of those teams gets to 12 wins. And I think New England and the Chiefs are getting there. So, but yeah, I mean, look, Baltimore to me is like the Redskins. I don't know what, any given week, I have no feel for them. Like, whatever I say I think is going to happen in their games, bet the mortgage on the opposite, because I can't get a feel for either team.
Jason, I'll go to the other end of the spectrum for your power rankings for the bottom team. Number 32 has got to be the Raiders. Did they make a $100 million mistake by hiring John Gruden? And it sounds like their rumblings, they may be willing to part with Derek Carr after the season.
I think they are trading Derek Carr after the season. I don't know why. At this point, it's clear that John Gruden wants nothing to do with Reggie McKenzie, and he was peddling some of their recent picks before the season. And he's open to trading. I mean, he's traded Khalil Mack. He wants to trade Carl Joseph. They would have traded Obi Melifonwu if he wasn't on IR. They're not playing last year's number one, Gerrion Conley. He got, like, oh, I think 6 snaps 2 weeks ago. I don't know how many yesterday, but I was watching that game closely. I never saw him on the field. So they trade him. So at that point, why aren't you trading? Like, you're starting over. You want to control the next couple of drafts. If you can get a 1 and something for Derek Carr, and I don't know what his value will be by the time we get to January, the way this season's going. But people who run football teams last week, multiple of them told me they think you could get a 1. Now, a couple said a 1 plus something. But regardless, I think he probably does it. His thing is about my guys, right? I want my guys, and I go out and get them, and I don't want anybody else to mess with them, and they're going to do it my way, and that's going to be the only thing they know. So, I mean, I could see him picking Keenum off the scrap heap, you know what I mean, as his old guy, and then drafting somebody. If he doesn't get the first overall pick outright, he's going to have the draft capital to go and get it. And getting his quarterback of the future and then rolling with the veteran for another year and a half, and then breaking the young kid in when they finally go to Vegas. I believe that's where this is headed. Mm.
You think the Eagles start putting stuff together, and do they make – I mean, can they sustain, you know, a legitimate division winning run with those two running backs?
That division, possibly. But will they get – home games beyond the first round as presently constructed, no.
Right.
And they're realist, and they're willing to make cold, sort of cunning, calculated decisions. And they didn't clear that cap space to do nothing. So does it have to be Le'Veon Bell or Marshawn Lynch? No. Could it be Patrick Peterson? Could it be an offensive lineman? Could it be a combination of those things? I don't expect them to stand pat. They never do. In most years, Howie doesn't want to stand pat. In a year like this, where you're trying to win back-to-back titles and really do something historic and do it with a different quarterback than you did it with last year, and with Jason Peters look like he's falling apart and some other guys getting a little long in the tooth and swapping out centers and losing running backs, I have a very difficult time thinking with, you know, what they played on Thursday. They've got 9 days till they play again, the Carolina trade deadline 2 weeks away. They're up to something.
And they also have 3 games. Like you said, they got a big break before the Panthers game next week, right?
Yeah, so they got plenty of time to evaluate everybody else's film and see, you know, who's healthy and who's not around the league. And they were making calls a month ago on Le'Veon Bell. Now it's cooled, but all it takes is one phone call to get that crank back up. I don't see them coming out of this without making a move. Not when you've got teams like Arizona and Oakland that they're clearly sellers, and they've fallen so far off the pack, and they're not close to winning this year or next year. So draft picks to them are gold right now.
Yep.
It's Jason Lockenfor from CBS Sports. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
All right, bro.
You got it, guys. Have a good one. Thank
Thanks.
You.
I mean, the Eagles have the Panthers, the Jags, and the Cowboys all at home the next 3 weeks.
That's all right, this tasty. Is
before they have to play the Saints in New Orleans.
Okay.
So these next 3 weeks – clearly all winnable, but they probably do have to address that running back situation.
I just see 9-7 winning the division this year.
9-7, 10-6 maybe.
You got the Eagles at 3-3, and yes, I believe they can take off, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to be one of those years. It's going to be
might not be
a tight division, excluding the Giants, who have clearly separated themselves at the bottom.
Yeah, they seem especially bad. Outside of Saquon Barkley. And Beckham, if he's not going crazy on the sidelines.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts. I mean, a few of these divisions are really going to come down to the last week.
But yeah, looking back on that draft, when I mentioned that tweet, imagine if you had Patrick Mahomes instead of Blake Bortles in Jacksonville.
Then you'd be in a much better spot than you are right now. You'd be better than 3-3.
I mean, did you see that interception that Bortles threw yesterday?
Yeah,
he threw him in triple coverage.
It doesn't even surprise you anymore.
It was terrible.
All right, we got to get out of here. For Bish Cakes, I'm JP. We'll see you tomorrow. Grant and Danny next. Remember DJ Swearinger at 11 o'clock right here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.